So hello, I think we started being recorded now. So this is the follow-up lecture from first week, as scheduled in the plan I showed you last week. This will be the continuum of introduction to teamwork and cybersecurity from the last week. I guess some of you might be online or will try to watch this lecture recorded online later. In the meantime, I'm waiting for the main screen to show the slides. I'm not sure. Can someone check if it's already visible online? Okay, so we'll start with introduction.
Yeah.
We'll start with introduction to teamwork.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll start with. Left it on. Technology. Yes. We will start with introduction to teamwork part that we left from last week. So we will continue discussing about team composition, team management, work contracts. It should be interesting for you. You will have an assignment about that. Team meetings, conflict management. And then we'll go further discussing about the FIRO theory, F-I-R-O, and also the phases of development that are mentioned into this theory. So, starting with team composition, in a functional team, members are supposed to know their affiliation, to aim into achieving something, to agree on common goals and common norms, also to work with each other interactively, to thrive in a certain team. They will also be used to feel accepted by all the other members in the team. They should feel they have the right team leader within their own team. They should feel that the roles are distributed correctly, that there is some capacity in the team to change the roles. So whenever you need to, let's say, take a rest or have something else, some activities, there will be someone replacing you and all your capacities there. And also, members are supposed to be satisfied with the tasks they have been assigned to. So some people are less concerned about other people. Some others like to work independently. Many of them would not like to interfere, but some of them might be or not able to change the roles. In this slide, we showed how what would be the main properties within a functional team, as opposed to any other team. I think I missed something. No. Okay. Work contract. Yeah. So about the work contract, it takes hard work to become an effective team. And then we also should know that several teams might use different types of tools in order for the teamwork to be effective. And so this is not meant only to be like ICT tools or whatever, like, tangible assets, etc. But it might be also other kinds of tools that someone knows about and can use them in such cases. So an optional tool might be a work contract. So a work contract might be seen as a tool, Arbeitskontrakt, and as it will help the team members to keep track of what has been going on and also to help with the collaboration started. There are several models and ways how to build and to create this work contract. In this course, you will be taught about using the so-called GRPI model, or in Norwegian MRPI. So it's a model that includes several topics, which are also embodied in the name, like G for goal setting, or in Norwegian MOL, right? Then it's R for roles setting. Then also we have the P for procedures, and also the I for interaction, or also known as the topic about interpersonal questions and issues. All of these topics, goals, roles, procedures, interactions, once they are defined clearly from the team members, they will certainly help to have a good answer to the question about the factors that would make a group work more or less effectively. So let's look into more details into the GRPI model. When we talk about goal setting, we have to first define what's a goal, MOL, right? So a goal is not less than an expression of what a team wants to achieve. So the goal setting process would be somehow one of the most critical processes of the team. It is the first one, and actually that's why also it is one of the most important, because you have to start from somewhere. You have to start from setting the goal. So putting the purpose. So what is your main goal? Why do you have to work on a team? What are the main tasks and so on? And on the other hand, we can say that a goal is a desired condition for the team, like, let's say, the final outcome. But also, it might help to set a goal, because in that case, we will have an indication of how the work is being developed. But then, we also should be very careful, because we should not set highly unexpected goals or unrealistic goals. For example, in terms of the tasks you are going to do, you should not try to create something that takes a lot of effort, a lot of work, and so on. So you should create something that is worthwhile for the purpose of your project, let's say, but that should not be hard enough or, I mean, too difficult to be accomplished. So you should find something that is achievable, but also, let's say, good enough to fulfill the objectives of the project that you have in your daily tasks. And also, goals should be clear, unambiguous, and measurable. So it's like you will have to define some measures on how to assess the daily development of your work as related to the goal. Then we talk about roles. Roles are right after the goal. So once you can define the goal of your teamwork, you will have to define the roles or the role for each of the members. And in this case, it might be that some of the members have more than one role, depending on the team size and on the task complexity overall. And also, it should you should have in mind that usually members are responsible are to be responsible of the tasks that are more natural, that feel more natural to them. So whenever there is this part where you have to assign the roles to all the other team members, or you have to discuss about the roles, keep this in mind. So in the first place, try to assign the tasks as related to what is the other person more capable about. And then if there is something else that you need to consider, then also you might also add something else. But you also have to be careful, because it might happen sometimes that what are the other person's expectations, it's different from what are your own expectations or what are the team's expectations toward him. So in this case, there might be a chance that there might be some discussion, some sort of conflict, but usually so this is also very critical part of the teamwork process and the team building process. But there are many teams who have been able to go past this phase and then start working and fulfilling the goals together. After the roles setting, there is the procedure, settings. And in the procedure setting questions, there are several things that we need to specify. It's like, for example, when you have this product and you want to define all the specifications about it. And in the procedures, you have this goal that you have defined. You have the roles between all the team members. And now you have to answer to questions, for example, how should we decide on our further activities? Also, if there are any conflicts, how should the team deal with it? There are different types of conflict management. We will talk about that a bit later. Then, how should the meetings be led? So it's like, will we have a leader, a team leader? How is the team leader supposed to act in different cases and so on? And then, of course, how should the team meetings be? For example, typically, when you have a long meeting, you must have also some breaks, or when you have so also you have to consider about the time of the meeting, that it's not too late or too early, and also that it doesn't conflict with other schedules that the members might have, and so on. And then when we're talking about the interaction phase, it's about how the team members are or get connected to each other, get to know more about each other. And this is also very much related to the so-called team chemistry. So if you and the other members in your team will be able to have this sort of team chemistry, it will be nice, and it will, you will see that you will have better results in the end. But this cannot be pushed, or this cannot be created like on its own. there you have to have some common activities, so different activities that where you will be able to work with each other in a funny way, maybe, hopefully, and then you will also know about more about each other, and this will also be more convenient if there is also trust between you and the other members of the team, mutual respect, and also there it must be that you will have to define some sort of relax or leisure activities for all the members of the team. And so these are the four parts of the GRPI model, or MRPI in terms of Norwegian. And as I mentioned before, this is like sort of a hierarchical model. So it's like you have to start from the goal. You cannot assign roles without having the goal defined, or you cannot try to create this team chemistry without specifying how should the team decide on something. Will there be if there are any conflicts, how should we deal with those, and so on, and also the tasks assigned. So everything should be on this correct order. Now, more about team management. Usually in industry there is the case of teams which are sort of fixed and also that have this permanent leader. So it's like whenever you have to finish a project, there is one team that deals with it. There is this person, this individual that maybe has the like the proper skills to be the leader, and that's why he's the team leader, and so on. Now, whenever we talk about student teams or high school team activities and so on, it's a bit more difficult to have this because you already know, I think, and you already are familiar with that. And it's not easy to have this permanent leader, but that's also something that's like, let's say, suggested from the academia. It's sort of the situational leadership that I'm talking about. So it's like you don't have this permanent team leader in the team, but anyway you should have a leader. So it's better to have someone as leader than none. And also it's not meant to be that the one that is the team leader should also have the main tasks and should be responsible of most of the tasks and most of the activities. They might be separated. So in that term, it might be that in any event, there might be someone else who can replace the team leader, and also this can be like an ongoing activity, so everyone might be a leader for one day, let's say. And also this is also related to the rotation ability, so it's good that if you are part of a team, you try and rotate the role of the leader at least, but also maybe some other roles, so that you have all the members committed and engaged into the main activities of the of your work. And furthermore, about team meetings, it's we have a lot of different types of meetings. Meetings vary very much depending on the team size, on the type of the meeting, formal, informal, etc., on the organization that holds these team meetings, and of course on the purpose. But all of them have some commonalities. So all the meetings are held for a specific purpose. So you even when you will have your team meetings, you will have to define the purpose of it. So it's like, for example, the first team meeting should be about this assignment. We should discuss how to deal with it and how to send the task and so on. Then all the meetings, of course, involve communication between people. There's no meeting if we don't have communication. We cannot discuss anything. And then all the meetings should have a leader. And this is, again, not like a usual permanent leader, but it might be anyone who is like more responsible for this part of the activities. Furthermore, most of the meetings are also able to provide information to all the team members, to all the members that are part of the meeting. They are also able, the members are also able to collect information. So it's like when you communicate, you also take and you give. So it's a two-sided communication, and you both need to know more about something, and you can provide more contribution about something else. And also in the meetings, in many of the meetings, there are these people who are trying to solve something with their own opinions, and there might be some cases where they will try to persuade the others. There are also a lot of problem solving in these types of meetings and a lot of decision making. In the team meeting, also another important part is the moment where you have to plan the meeting. So everything starts from planning the meetings. And how do you plan the meeting? First, you decide on the topics. So you make this kind of agenda. You start listing them, and you start then ranking them in terms of their importance and also in terms of the time that you want to dedicate to each of them. And it might be a good idea to even specify, for example, the first topic we will talk about like circa 15 minutes, then the second topic 10 minutes and so on. So you will have to define the whole time of the meeting and how you intend to fill it. This should be done from someone who is the most responsible about the meeting, about that kind of meeting. And then you will also have this person who is called the meeting chair, which is like the one who is responsible for most of the activities during the meeting. He will be able to open the meeting, start conversation with the other members. He will be able to conduct it from the beginning till the end, or at least for most of it. He should try and highlight the most important points and then start discussing with the others about it. He should be able to summarize everything that was discussed and specify the progress done at that moment. He should also end the meeting when all the topics are covered, and also he should use this time to specify what is left, what is next to be done. And another special ability of this person should be to deal with the cases when there are some bad news to be shared among the members. For example, something going wrong, something delaying plans and so on. When there are some difficult decisions to be made, this is the meeting chair should be the one who should decide. And also when there is some lack of interest, for example, not all members are listening, or not of them are attending the meetings and so on. So there should be something done about this. And this will also be somehow specified in the work contract. So you start with the work contract and then you have all this other stuff. But then the meeting should also have an assistant. I'm not sure now about the Norwegian. I think it's the same, right? Mote assistant something. Yeah. So it's, I mean, the similar, yeah. But yeah, assistant, yeah. And so the meeting assistant should be able to gather the notes during the meetings. So it's like when everybody else speaks, he or she should gather the notes. And also should be able to write the minutes. I think it's referat something, which should be then approved. So once the minutes are written, this usually is done after the meeting. And as soon as the minutes are written, we will come back to that, the document should be sent to all the team members in order to be approved, so that everyone has this has his own opinions included there, so it's good for everyone to know. So minutes. It must be important that the minutes should be written as soon as possible, and that means, if possible, right after the meeting. They should be highly accurate, so even if the assistant has forgotten to mention something, the other members should be able to read and to add wherever possible they think that there's something to be added. The minutes should not be like a literal reproduction, so it's not like A said this, B said this, C and so on, so the whole dialogue, we might have a recorder for that. But it's nice to have like the main ideas, the main thoughts, the main discussions, everything, but not, I mean, like reproducing everything. And also, the minutes should be able to show what to do in the next activities, and also who should do it in terms of how the decisions were made. Then when writing the minutes, the assistant, the meeting assistant, whoever will have that role, should again write them as quickly as possible. Keep the notes as long as the minutes are approved. So it's like you should keep the notes, because unless the minutes are approved, you should still be able to get back to them and maybe add something else. You should be accurate, brief and concise. Again, what to do and who should do it. You should also be able to follow the same order as in the meeting agenda. So we talked about the first topic, this and that, second topic, this and that, and so on. And submit the minutes immediately after they are approved. So it's like whenever they are approved from all the members, you just submit the final document, and then you go on with the next activity, which is usually the next meeting to be announced. Then the last thing to talk about in this first part of introduction to teamwork is about conflict management. So, as mentioned before, whenever there is this teamwork, there will also be some conflicts. There is no team without any types of conflicts, so you will be able to experience them and also somehow to be safe afterwards. In these types of conflicts, there are also several ways of conflict management. The first one, which usually is like chosen from different types of teams, is when trying to deny the conflict. So it's like saying that we don't have any conflicts, everything is going perfect, and then you keep just hiding the conflict, and then sometimes this conflict will become bigger and bigger, so it might be more difficult to deal with it later on. Then there are some other teams where especially the team leader would be using force or coercion in terms of, let's say, avoiding the conflict or removing every kind of consequence it has. And this is especially when there is no other way how to get rid of the conflict. So it's like this will be done, and this is the final decision. And also there might be something else. For example, if the two parts have like contradictory opinions, then there might be this third opinion coming in, and they should be able to agree on the third opinion so that everything then progresses further. There also is a negotiation solution, and we see a lot of negotiation in these political events. We see a lot of negotiation, for example, going on in Norway, for example, it's the unions that are continuously negotiating the work terms and everything. So it's very related to work contracts and teamwork and so on. And in this case, with negotiation, it's not that the parties that are involved are like solving the conflict. It's more that they are trying to limit the consequences. So it's like, if this will not get solved, then something will happen. But if we try to negotiate, we will have something that is like more easy to overcome. We might also try problem solving by just providing more information. And there is this example. Let's say that you know that there is, I'm not sure if there is anyone here, but there are a lot of people around the world who still think that the Earth is flat, right? I'm not sure if there is anyone here. Okay. So there are these people who think that the Earth is flat, and there are these other people who think that the Earth is round. Okay, but how do you solve this? So how do you get to the people who think that the Earth is flat to really understand that it's not that the right idea? One solution would be to have this trip to space and then try to get them to see the Earth from up, and then just try to give them more information about it. So it's like, this is how it is. And this is like problem solving by providing more information. But then, if you are not able to do this, if there is another easier way out of this, then you might also choose to do the reframing or to redefine the reality. So it's like, again, some of us think that the Earth is round, some others think that the Earth is flat. At least one of the parties should just, let's say, try to think otherwise, and then we can just move on and just let that argument go past. So, fear of theory. Actually, it's a couple of word initials, so it's like an abbreviation. In the fear of theory lesson, we will talk more about team development and the maturation processes that a team goes through. So there are a lot of team theories in team development. But for this course, for this semester, we have chosen to talk about the FIRO model, which, as mentioned in the slide there, is means Fundamental Interpersonal Relations Orientation Model. It was first defined from William Schutz, who is an American psychologist. And he was able to define it, and then he was able to provide more information and to have something, to provide more exercises and to see how that could be seen in real life, in different types of teams. In the FIRO model, you have a lot of things about how each individual team member should behave, how the team as a whole is performing, and also the team leaders and the organizations as a whole role in developing performing teams or highly performing teams. So FIRO is nothing else than a comprehensive theory of team development and maturation processes, with this model, you will be able to understand human behavior and what happens in the typical meetings between people. It also helps inspire processes for group development, develop more effective leaders, and also it helps understand the importance of collaborative actions and partnerships and alliances. So again, a bit of history. FIRO was developed in the 1950s. It was a bit after the end of World War II. The U.S. Marine had this large fleet of navies, of submarines, sorry, navy, yeah, of navy submarines, and there was this constant thing about teams that perform well and teams that perform less better. So it's like, why do we have such different types of teams? What is the underground problems and so on? So there was this guy, William Schutz, who started studying the submarine crews in the U.S. Navy, and you have a picture of I think the first submarine that was working on atomic energy, something, nuclear energy. And he started this study to understand and systematize the behavior of different individuals in relation to each other as part of a part of different teams. And his first thought was that it should be about individual member behavior. And it should be that the behavior that we often express in certain types of groups should be very much similar to the behavior that we have ourselves created by being part of a certain family. Because if you think more about it, the family is like the first group that all of you, each of you, has been part of. So whatever you are taught, whatever you have been doing, and whatever kind of behavior you have had since a child, you will all mostly reflect the same stuff when you are also part of a team, when you are older, and then when you are going to work, and so on. So it's like family is like the first and most influential group in each one's personality. Then it said that FIRO model should contribute to increased efficiency in organizations. And this would be done by stimulating and supporting the employees while increasing their self-awareness, which would, of course, correspond to more creativity and efficiency. So let's have this local case about this. In the Olympics 2012 in London, there was the Norwegian handball team, which actually we might say they didn't have this good start. So I also checked the results, and it was like they were like the last team to be qualified from the group in the group phase in the Olympics. So they had this messy start. They had these negative press releases. It looked like everything was going wrong and so on and so on. But what happened further was that there was this coach. I don't have his name now, but he had this very good attitude. And so they were Olympic champions in the end. So they started from, let's say, the bottom. And then they went on by defeating one by one all the bigger contenders until they finally went to win the finals, and so they were Olympic champions. So whenever And there's also another example from Rosenborg, which is like all-time national football champion, and so on. I'm not sure how long he's been keeping this track, but since the 90s, I read somewhere, and you will also maybe, I will also share the material later with you. That in the 90s, the Rosenborg team had this period when they were experiencing some troubles inside. So, like, the players were not really happy with each other, with the coach, and so on. There was some conflict inside. And then what happened was that the same coach was able to shut down, in a sort of way, the whole conflicts, and then create this climate where everyone was able to perform better, and so on. And this is also part of the team development phases. So there might be some small part where you will be trapped into some conflicts, but then you should start thinking how to get past or how to get over it and how to resolve it, so in order that it doesn't come back, and then you can develop further and be like the somehow the perfect team. So there are three basic development stages which William Schutz defined, and they are prominent in a certain group. It all starts with the inclusion phase, then the control and role search, and also the openness phase. So it's like the beginning and then the end, when everybody is happy, and it's like everybody can express his opinion, and so on. Each of the phases has different challenges, and it's not that they are fixed in time. It might happen that some teams, as mentioned before, might be stuck in the first phase. It might happen that they might be stuck in the after going through the second phase, and because that's where the most conflicts arise. And then, yeah, but the teams that are able to go to the third phase then are able to go up to the end, and then they are also able to be like almost permanent. Also, it's not possible to speed up the processes by skipping phases, and the members can also influence the progress by using proper tools. In other words, there is this diagram which shows how is the whole cyclical process, or almost cyclical. You start with belonging or inclusion phase, because it's different, the terminology from Norwegian to English, so I tried using both of them. You start with tilhørighet. Then you have this intermediate phase, which we'll be discussing a bit later. Control, role search. And then you have the openness phase. And it's all related to this rowing team. So how does a rowing team work? In the end, everyone will be doing the same, I mean, the activities in synchronization with the others. Okay, so I think we can stop here, maybe. Yeah. And then go on in the second hour. Questions so far?